what will make this business so attractive is if you can go away for 6 months, come back and it's still there, you've got something you can sell. So that's about getting your business ready for that eventuality, that investing in the team and the people that you can be around, that you can step away. And that having a high valuation and making yourself, you know, investor ready is crucial.
Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast with business strategist, speaker and author, Gavin Preston. Tap into this meeting of minds between everyday business people on their journey to master business growth. Join them as they share strategies, insights and shortcuts to help you survive and thrive in business and life as you scale your business and achieve a bigger impact.
Hey, Gavin here. You love the audio format because you listen to podcasts. I'm a massive fan of learning through audio courses and books. What I particularly like about Knowable is that courses are short form, like a podcast, and expert-led, like an audiobook, with courses on leadership from the commander of the International Space Station and on startups from the co-founder of Reddit. Grab yourself 20% off with coupon code GAVIN in capital letters, G-A-V-I-N, which brings the price down to just over $3 a month. It's a no-brainer. Download the Knowable app or visit knowable.fyi. Use code GAVIN to get 20% off. How you doing? Gavin here. Welcome back to the Business Mastermind Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the things that you can do, you can start planning and implementing in your business to increase the valuation multiple of your business upon sale. We talked to multiple CFO, guy that's sold businesses, been involved in business acquisitions, been involved in raising millions of pounds and dollars across the world. Rob Jones, he's the founder of RJF Business Services, and they really specialize in working with startups and early stage businesses, not only in helping them secure the funding and making sure that they are investor ready, but helping them ensure that should the day come along when you either purposefully or go looking for someone to buy your business, or you find someone knocking at your door, if you get these things right in your business, you can be looking at an increased valuation multiple on your business. Well worth a listen. Hey, Gavin here, and welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Rob Jones. Rob founded accountancy firm RJF. He's an entrepreneur. He's grown and sold businesses. He specializes in helping startups, being investor ready, getting funding. We're going to be talking about how, as business owners and how startups, you can be investor ready, whether you're looking to grow to a point of wanting to take on investment to scale, or whether you need investment to help you go and do acquisitions. And actually, as one accountant talking to another, I'm pleased to say that Rob isn't your typical accountant. He's a white-collar boxing champion. He's a session drummer, and he performs with live bands in recording studios. He's completed a US tour with a UK band in 2018 and played at the famous Whiskey and Go-Go in Hollywood. So, Rob, welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast, and celebrating you for being a normal guy, irrespective of our shared early career education.
Yeah, thanks, Gavin. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I mean, all the other, you know, the drumming was good, but it just didn't pay the bills as well as the accountancy.
The contrast. So tell me a little bit about what your career journey. So you're an entrepreneur, you've grown businesses, you've sold businesses. So share with the listeners a bit about your own sort of business journey, and then ultimately what sort of set you encouraged you to set up RJF with a real focus on helping startups to become an investor ready.
Yeah, of course. So I qualified as ACCA in 2006, and one of my first jobs, I was very fortunate in that I managed to get a finance director job straight away in Spain for a company called Alstom PLC. I always wanted to work overseas, so Alstom was a big French engineering company which my dad had worked for, and he was able to open a door there. So I worked in Spain and Switzerland for a while, and then in the Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, I had the role as the finance director for Alstom Netherlands, and they had a lot of tax advantages in the Dutch sort of tax law which gave rise to a lot of merger and acquisitions being conducted through the Dutch entity. So I got to be involved in quite a lot of mergers and acquisition activities. Some of the biggest deals that were around at the time, one was was involved in buying sort of the nuclear division back from the French government, which was worth 16 billion euros, to buying small companies in the supply chain, engineering companies of about 5 million euros. So I got to see a real big spectrum from that. And that sort of experience in particular there set me up for what I'm doing at the moment. Okay. We came back to the UK about 10 years ago. We had our first child while I was overseas, and my wife wanted to be near her parents. So we came back, and it came back during the crash. So there wasn't quite a lot of jobs to walk into. And Alston wanted to keep me on board, but they didn't really have anything in the UK, which was at my level of what I was overseas. So I did a lot. So I started to do like portfolio FD work for private equity firms, you know, if they would go and invest into a business, or if they were looking at a business to see if it was viable from investments, or sort of like they would send me in to kick the tires, so to speak. And I got to see a lot of different types of businesses and how private equity and VCs would view them to invest in. And using a lot of my experience from Alston, what I used to do there was exactly the same as what I was doing in the UK then, where if they were looking at a company, they would send me in to do the due diligence reports, and the sales guys would agree a price, and then my job would be to go in to knock that price down, to find everything wrong with it that they could say, well, you know, yeah, we agreed this, but because we found this and this, then we want to knock the price down. So I kind of jumped on the other side of the fence, working with a lot of the startups and early stage businesses, because I think what's the saying, is it gamekeeper turn poacher, or is it the other way around?
Poacher turn game. Yes, a gamekeeper turn poacher. That's right.
So I kind of was like, well, look, I know what they're looking for. So you need to do this, and you need to do that, and you need to get this in order, because if I was looking at this from a due diligence, this is where I've been knocking the price off. So we want to keep as much value in your business as possible. So this is where you've got to improve and sort of sharpen up. So I started doing that. I worked with a group of angel investors as well. So we were not just looking at PE and VCs, it was actually angel investors too. And made a few investments into businesses and worked with them and helping them to gain some further. So we would make the seed investment, which was like the initial, probably a small amount of money, which gave them to a basis to either whatever they were doing, if say they were developing a platform or product, would to be get that sort of prototype in place, or get an a viable product which they could take to market to be able to go to investors with, and then we do the larger sort of Series A fund with them and help them do that. And so I've been in a few businesses and actually been really involved with them and sort of shared the experiences of being, you know, thinking of crap, how we're going to pay wages next week, to actually we're doing really well, we want to expand, how do we do that and go overseas, and we've got all this money, what do we do with it? So being on both sort of spectrum, ends of the spectrum of a business owner's life. I set up a recruitment business, recruit for finance staff a few years ago, which I sold, and that was more because one of my roles in the FD portfolio side was that I went in on behalf of some auditors who asked me to go in to look at a recruitment business to get them ready for investment, and I just saw that actually, you know, I could see all the back office, and they weren't doing finance, but I one of my roles in Alston was recruiting a lot of finance teams. I'd go into different countries and recruit finance teams, and always found it difficult with recruitment agencies, in particular for accountancy. So it was just an idea that I had, and I thought, well, I've seen how it works in the background now. I can see they can be worth a lot of money. I could do something a bit unique. And I had a really good network to open some doors. So first assignment was working for Zurich Insurance in Switzerland, finding their FD. And because of my ties to Switzerland, I got quite a lot of high profile work over there for like Glencore and Nielsen and Alstom and ABB. And, for a recruitment business, just to start out, was quite good. Anyway, I sold that a few years ago. So I've been through the whole process of starting, investing and also selling my own company, but also helping other companies to sell. So I set up RJF in 2018 on the basis that I just saw a real need for accounting businesses to be able to give a bit more advice on startups and early stages, because you find your big four are not really that interested because it's quite small for them. The mid tiers are quite expensive. They try and help, but ultimately they've got a big overhead to recover, so there's not really much they can do without getting paid. And then the high street accountants are very good at the compliance work, but the actual sort of business advice and the advisory piece, props not so much, because they're just good at doing the compliance and sort of. I was coming across when we did like the angel investment rounds. People look at Dragon's Den. It was very much like Dragon's Den. We'd have companies come to us that were founders, entrepreneurs with great business ideas, and you look at it, and you would have seen on Dragon's Den, the dragons are all really excited, think this is going to be nailed on, and it's going to be a fantastic business. And then they start quizzing about the numbers, and then they all get lost, and they get flummoxed, and they don't know what they mean by burn rate or break even. And then suddenly everyone just, no matter how good the idea was, they suddenly think, no, I can't really back it because I can't give my money to someone who doesn't really understand numbers and trust you. And that's what we were finding in the angel network. And when I spoke to the owners, and they were like, I don't know what they mean when they're asking about that. What's your business plan? Have you got a model? And they said, yeah, my accountant did something, but I don't really understand what he's done, and it doesn't make sense. And I do my annual accounts, and I give you those. But so I just thought that, I can do the compliance work. That's a piece of cake. But where we could add value is that, I don't have big overheads like the big boys do, so I don't need to charge not silly because they're justifiable rates, but the expensive rates which a startup can't afford. But also it's an interest for me, because I can come across quite a lot of interesting businesses that may be worth investing in, but also maybe worth doing a bit of work up front for exchange of equity if I think it's worth it. But I've got that flexibility to be able to do that and then go on that journey with them and help them grow. And it's the interest of my business, because if I can be there to help them, if they are going for investors, get them investor ready. If they're just looking for some advice of how to sort of understand the business and where it's going to make money or where it's going to lose money, and preempt a lot of that, and just do a lot more sort of be like that outsourced CFO, which a lot of them can't afford. But if I keep them sort of financially healthy from that advice, then I've got a long-term client, and so it is in the interest of the business to be able to give that advice up front. So whenever clients call us or talk to me, it's not chargeable, they're a client, and we say, you get unlimited support. And it is, if there's a piece of work we need to do, then obviously we need to charge. But just to sort of say, Rob, I've got this idea, or I've got an investor, and this, I've done a few last week where they've had some term sheets, and they said, I don't really understand it, would you go through it with me and explain this, am I being potentially ripped off here or not? And so I do that, and just experience, because I've got a lot of experience of seeing term sheets and things. It's not really what's in the term sheet, it's what's not in the term sheet that's usually the issue, and so it's just helping them do that.
Fantastic. So you built a team that you've got the components, so if you're doing some of the traditional sort of bookkeeping compliance accounting stuff, but also there's this advisory piece, whether it's CFO or fundraise advisory piece, investor ready, that really has a significant amount of value.
That's so, right, yeah.
Bit of a blue ocean there for you then in terms of the firm, because there's not many out that are offering that to the startup space.
No, and when I set it up and I spoke to my peers, a lot of them were saying, I don't get in the startup, it's a nightmare, because they don't have any money, so they can't afford to pay you, and it's always a trouble of getting paid. And there is, there's a stat, isn't there, where it is, it sort of, 80% of businesses will fail. And I just thought, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. I mean, I don't need to charge a lot, because I use a lot of the software tools, which make things a lot easier. I don't think I could have done this 5 years ago. with the tools that are in existence now. You know, we use Xero, we're a gold partner with Xero. We use a lot of management forecasting tools, which just make things a lot easier and quicker, and it means you can keep the cost down because you're not spending as much as putting it, you know, 80% of your time putting all numbers into a spreadsheet and then only 20% reviewing it, whereas the 80% is a lot chargeable because you've got a lot of hours. We can do it quite slick. And with clients, we put them on monthly plans, so they've got an easy, manageable monthly payment to do. I mean, we do say, look, you have to sign up to a direct debit, so it protects our business. But it works because, you know, as I said, I've got the time to be able to help them, support them, and grow, help them grow. And it's a long term project, so it's about sort of being along them with their journey. And in terms of fees and payable, that they'll, you know, that they will come as they grow, and the fee book will increase from my own point of view in terms of a business. But we're also looking at getting that loyalty with the client that we've Brilliant. Been there and helped them through it, and the life, and it's more of a lifetime value of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we see. Crucial. So, you know, we've had a success story, which has been exactly what I wanted the business to do. And a long story short with it, a software business almost went bust. They came to us, we talked to them about R&D. They'd never done it. R&D didn't even know about it, the accountant had never said anything about R&D claims. So we did them an R&D claim, got them £50,000 back, kept them afloat for 6 months. 12 months later, they're signing contracts worth like $2 million, $3 million with the US companies. And last year, they were valued at $30 million, and that's within Fantastic. 2 years.
Within 2 years? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we got them through, helped them, give them advice, and now we're... You know, I can say with the clients that we've got a £30 million business on our books as a client. So, and we'll go through the deal process with them as well and help them do that. So, it's that was kind of the blueprint I wanted for the business to be with clients. So,
great story.
Yeah.
So, let's talk a bit about what are some of the things that whether they're a startup or they're a business owner that wants to get investment, whether that's investment to scale or investment in terms of a buyout, they want to exit. What are some of the things that business owners are not doing right that is eroding value from their business?
Yeah, so certain things that I would go in when a deal had been struck to buy a business and we'd have a look at is... particularly for your early stages, we've not got a finance function, is management accounts. It sounds simple, but you find quite a lot of owners don't really understand the numbers. They just get a set of annual accounts and usually 9 months after the year ends. So they're meaningless. But as a potential investor or an acquirer, what we would be looking at is saying, well, okay, you're valuing your business based on your projections. Yes, you're valuing it on what you're doing, particularly for startups, because you are valuing it on projections because you've got no sales. But if we just talk about, say, a business that has been going around for a few years now, valuations are not just, well, I've made this amount of profit and I give a multiple of that profit, because you'll get a low valuation typically because, you know, if you're an early stage business, you're putting a lot of money into development and expenditure and investment into the business. So if you just take a profit figure as a multiple, then you're going to get a low valuation. What you're trying to do is trying to sell the potential of the business to increase that valuation. So where your management accounts come into that is one, keeping on top of your numbers, sort of, you know, monthly, if you can't do monthly, at least quarterly, so that when we're looking at that business, you say, well, they've got good financial controls because they're able to react to things because they're getting timely financial information, rather than saying in a year's time, oh, I didn't realize we were losing that much money. Because a lot of businesses will see, well, I've got enough money in the bank, so I can't be losing money. I mean, there was one, for example, for 25 years, it wasn't in the accountancy business, this was when I was doing portfolio FD, 25 years, I'd never produced a set of management accounts, had done everything based on the bank statement. And he said, well, I've got enough cash in the bank, so I'm all right. Well, not really, because, you know, your management accounts, they were doing like, they had like printing machines and things. And a very long story short, you know, putting in management accounts and assessing sort of the output of these machines, he realized he had five machines too many. and he was losing a lot of money, and he was like, well, 25 years, if you've just realised that I've lost half a million in a year, how much have I lost in 25 years?
Wow.
And he'd never really noticed that because he's always had enough cash in the bank. But, you know, as any business owner, you want as much cash as you want. And if he's just realised he's lost a year by having not efficient machines and doing too much, that he spent 500,000 more than he had to, you know, it's a real sort of sobering thought and a realization of, yeah, maybe I should have kept on top of my numbers. So when we go into a business, we have a look at the accounts, but also it's not just showing what you've done, it's your projections, because your projections are having an impact on the valuation of the business. Because when you're pitching your business, you say, well, in 5 years, I'm going to be doing £30 million. So you go, okay, well, that's good. And yeah, we will study the projections. But if you've got management accounts should always be reporting against your forecast. So we always encourage businesses to have a good forecasting model, but also reporting against that. Because one of the first things I'll look at is I'll say, right, okay, well, I can see your management accounts and I can see your forecast and I can see your variance to forecast. And I actually see that you're pretty good at forecasting because you've not got too much of a variance. So when you say you're going to be worth 30 million sales in 5 years' time, I've got a bit more confidence that you actually do know what you're talking about. And so it ticks the boxes.
And then you sell that to an investor or a funder, don't you?
Yeah.
But if that reduces risk if you're showing a track record of being accurate with your predictions.
100%, yeah. Whereas if you've not got anything, I can't show anything.
Yeah.
But also, if you're way out, then it's a case of, well, maybe you need to think a bit more about your forecasting, because I can't trust your projections if your management accounts and your forecasting is so far out. So, you know, that's one very important thing which doesn't get neglected, because a lot of people, like I said, they'll see the bank account and see it's okay, and it's only a problem when they've got no money. Whereas having that good finance process will preempt a lot of issues.
So where else do some business owners go wrong in terms of not being investor ready?
Yeah, there's other things outside of finance. So there's things such as, you know, HR. HR is the big thing in terms of the way people are employed, HR contracts. One client that we've seen, when you start a business, everything's quite buddy. You know, your mates, and you're starting business partner, and you recruit your mates, and you think, yeah, we'll sort out contracts later and we'll do all that. But, you know, that can be quite a big problem going forward, because one of part of the due diligence would be looking at, are your key people tied in?
Right.
I touched on recruitment, which is quite a big one, and recruitment is all about people. So your people and then your billers, if you've not got your top billers on good contracts secured in and maybe, you know, bought in through sort of things as incentives or option schemes or whatever, there's lots of things you can do. It certainly affects the value of the business, because I'm thinking, well, these guys they're not tied in, you know, the contracts are not covered. They can go whenever they want. So it's going to, reduces, again, valuation if I'm looking at value in your business. You know, so having your team tied in properly and to the protection of your business is good. And also a touch on team, operations and having a good management team is so key. And again, I do get startups, it's hard because you've not got the money and you're doing everything on your own. But as you develop, you know, and profits, it's so important to develop, because into your management team, into an operations team.
Hey, Gavin here. You love the audio format because you listen to podcasts. I'm a massive fan of learning through audio courses and books. What I particularly like about Knowable is that courses are short form, like a podcast, and expert-led, like an audiobook, with courses on leadership from the commander of the International Space Station and on startups from the co-founder of Reddit. Grab yourself 20% off with coupon code GAVIN in capital letters, G-A-V-I-N, which brings the price down to just over $3 a month. It's a no-brainer. Download the Knowable app or visit knowable.fyi. Use code GAVIN to get 20% off.
This is such a crucial point about, you know, having a team of, you know, A-grade players around you in order for you to be able to scale and to grow.
Yeah.
Many people put that hiring of a high caliber team off because they haven't got the funds to do it, or they go for a B or a C grade person because that's all that they can afford.
Yeah.
What's your view with mind of the longer the game, the bigger, you know, fundraising, etc.? Would you advocate that people, business owners, you know, put the business plan together and go out and raise funding so that they can recruit the right talent?
Yeah, it can be a bit of a chicken and egg, but when you're going out for planning, for investment, part of the plan, if you've not got that team, is important to specify, like, I've identified weaknesses, I need to do this, I need to have this person, I need to recruit that, and that can be part of your investment strategy to sort of say that this is why I need the money, because I need these people. And then certainly when you want to come and sell the business, you know, it's anyone who's looking at buying a business, they'll need that team in place to show that it's, because I always say to business owners, well, I touched on before we started the podcast, I was talking about, you know, a business where I've got a real life example of that. They weren't ready to sell when they wanted to sell. I mean, one of the things I said to him, what will make this business so attractive is if you can go away for 6 months, come back and it's still there, you've got something you can sell. So that's about getting your business ready for that eventuality, that investing in the team and the people that you can be around, that you can step away. And that, and in terms of having a high valuation and making yourself, you know, investor ready, is crucial. I'd say that, you know, I've touched on the accounts and finances, but that is what probably one of the most important things is that it's, and it's hard to sort of explain and not explain, but I think for a founder it's something difficult to take on board, that it's not all of, that it has to not be all about you, because it is all about you when you start it. But to be investor ready, to eventually the dream of selling your business, it has to be that it's not about you, that this can run without you. Because you think about the end goal, if you sell it, you're going to get a lot of money. You're why you motivate to still run this business. So that's, as an investor, I'm thinking, you know, yeah, I'm going to give you a lot of money and you're going to be off. And I don't really want you to still be in the business because you're not going to be that motivated. I mean, there's ways you can keep them motivated, of course. Sure, yeah. There's lots of things. But as a general rule, I want that to be a really good management team to be able to be running this, that's incentivized.
So we're talking about management team, management accounts, we talked about the HR aspect, the contracts, but also the quality of the management team. Mm. What other things will help not only you be investor ready, but increase your multiple?
Yeah. Contracts, legal is a big area which I see goes unnoticed. And
this is with customers or around protection of product?
Yeah, with products, with customers. IP, if you're a tech business, developing IP, making sure that you've got all that tight and it's in your business. So if you look at a tech business, if you develop something, get it protected, have it patented. If you're an e-commerce or a brand, you know, make sure things like your logos are all protected, and things like that can often get neglected, because again, it's cost getting the patent fees, it's cost getting it protected. In terms of trademark, you know, it's not that expensive to do. You can do it on the government website, but again, it looks quite complex when you look at all the forms and people put off. But in terms of valuation, if you come to market and you've got all that in place, it just takes another big box to say, yeah, no, that's all good. In terms of contracts with customers, again, you can see a lot of startups, they just want to get the business and they'll do whatever it takes to get that. And then when they look at the contract, so we had one a couple of years, well, not a couple of years, 18 months ago, and they really wanted this contract with this big brand name, and they signed up to it because it was an amazing deal. And then when you look at the fine print of it, they have a 10% royalty on everything that they sell to anyone the software. So as an investor, you look at that and you look at it and you're thinking, and there's no end date on
there's it. There's a chunk of your margin just gone.
10%. Yeah. I have to pay out to this, but not just for what they do, for any other customer. So,
whoa,
you know, illegal work. Again, I mean, it is money, and I get why people don't want to spend on legal fees, because it's just, you know, lawyers are expensive, but there are good firms and there are good startup, you know, people that do what I do in the legal field. So I think it's definitely worth spending time investment on that to get that shut, get all that really tight, because again, that's where you could fall down, and it can also scupper a deal in any due diligence if you've not got that, you know, the patent protection, the IP protection, the legal documents with your customers and suppliers as well. So, you know, the supply chain is really important, having that really sort of, you know, legal contracts for purchase agreements. Again, depending on your business and what you do, but I've seen it where you can get caught out, where you're tied into a frame agreement for 5 years just because you think you're getting a good price, but then the market's moved and you realize that if you could get out of this, you could save 20-30% on your margins, but you can't get out of it now because you just signed whatever was put in front of you because you wanted to get the deal. So I do strongly, you know, it's about having the right people around you to help and getting that advice, which I do get. It's getting that balance because it's expensive.
Well, that to me was the point I was going to pick up on. You know, when you're a larger, sophisticated, mid-sized or corporate-sized business, you're automatically going to do those things because you've got the budget and you've got the teams to be able to do that. If you're a startup or you're a high growth, relatively small business looking to sell, you're a founder owned business, you probably haven't got the budget or the funds. Budget's not even an irrelevant word, I don't think, you know, the ability to pay for some of those things. Yeah. So I think it comes back to the conversation that if you've got an end point in mind of whether you're going to get investment to scale or whether you're going to exit, you've got to make sure you get this stuff in place now. Otherwise, you could scupper a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not going to get it on day one for that reason of, you know, you haven't got the funds and the money, but it's about allocating the fund. I mean, you know, you do see businesses, as soon as they make a bit of money, they'll go buy a brand new car and put a lease on of a grand a month for a Range Rover or something, and then the business isn't really being, and you think, well, no, put that into the business because you want to be valuable. But when you are starting and you haven't got it, it's the only, like I say, there are, you know, there's not many do what we do in our finance field, because we you know, unless it's a specific way we charge, but we'll give that advice. But it's about trying to get that advice, you know, and there's lots of it out there, and the, like I say, there are legal firms that specialize in startups that will give that help. And but you know, every business needs money, so you've got to have money, and you know, to have like an employment contract, what's it going to cost? You pay about £350 have a template which ties in, rather than, you know, maybe getting one downloaded from the internet, which you can get, but often they're very sort of vanilla and general, where I would always advise getting more specific. So you're spending £350. Well, all right, so it's a lot of money, but is it a lot of money? It's going to give you, you've got to look at it, every pound that you invest. So if you just say, for example, in the business that you're in, and the multiples in your business are, say, 5x, just as an example, yeah. 5x yeah. profit, every pound you're spending as investment is giving you an extra £5 of value to your business. So it's just managing that. But there's lots of advice and help. Mentors are good. I always think, you know, it's good to get a mentor in place. NEDs and non-exec directors are good, because they can, you know, open a lot of doors, but they've got a lot of experience. So I think you will get ones that come on board for nothing, and maybe just take a share if they see potential with it. Again, you've got to be careful with that, and maybe that's a whole new subject about sort of shareholders and things like that. But yeah, you know, there can be, there's lots of sort of hubs. I mean, I'm in Manchester here, and we have entrepreneurial hubs, business growth hub, and things like that. And there's lots of advice and support available in that way that you can get, but it's just something not to be neglected. And a lot of people maybe not even know that it exists, or it's out there, or what they need to do, but there are things that you've got to get in place.
Any of the things that they need to do for investor ready?
If you've got business partners, I'd always have shareholder agreements. It's a common thing that never ever gets done, because people think, well, we'll never fall out and we'll always be in love, and when money comes into it, it usually causes problems. So, you know, shareholder agreements between business partners is crucial, very important. And again, kind of touching before, that could be a whole different conversation of what things to look out for and what's important and what you need to do. But I think that's a good thing to have in place if you're in business with someone, because again, from an investor point of view, we're looking at that, and if they're not clear and there's nothing in place, it can be sort of something where you think, oh, there's a bit of risk. Because you've got to think, any investors that are looking at businesses, they're always looking at the downside. They're not looking at the potential, which gets them hooked in. But when we're doing the due diligence, it's always the downside and looking at everything that I can do to sort of try and get more value myself out of the business, or less money. You know, say if I'm pledging 100 grand, then you're offering 20%. I'm going to look and say, oh, there's a bit more risk here, and I want 40% for that. And that's what we're doing. And that's, in terms of our clients, we're trying to do it the other way to say, this is what they're going to look out for. So yeah, I think, you know, shareholder agreements are key. Contracts I've touched on, in terms of legal IP. Yeah.
So I want to just change tack slightly and talk about funding. And obviously, over the course of the past 12 or so months, a good number of businesses have taken advantage of loans through coronavirus, bills, or business bounce back loan, or the equivalent in different territories around the globe. So the debt burden of a lot of small to medium sized businesses is significantly higher than it may have been, not in every case, but it would have been 12 months ago. How do you see the funding market changing and evolving, particularly as we're looking towards the end of the government backed loan schemes?
Yeah. Well, I think debt funding, I mean, it was difficult anyway, and I think that's going to be even more difficult. There's a lot of sort of risk with companies now, because they've got the bounce back and the C-bills, and I think they've maybe prolonged the life of the companies that maybe if they'd not had that, they would have gone bust. But what the impact now is of them paying for that back, it's going to make a lot of sort of funders very risk adverse. And they were quite risk adverse to startups in early stages anyway, but I think even more so now. I could see the cost of borrowing being even more expensive. They've always asked for personal guarantees, which I don't think you can ever get beyond that. I don't think anyone's going to do that. But I just think it'll be harder to get debt funding. It was difficult before the pandemic, I think, for certainly I saw a lot of startups and early stage businesses just getting overdrafts was difficult. But I think now with the C-bills and bounce backs in place, and once that finishes, to get debt could be even more difficult, unfortunately. Certainly the cost of it will go up.
Yeah,
they'll want more sort of return for the risk. In terms of investment through sort of equity, I think funny is not the right word, but I've not really seen a dip in that during the pandemic. I've still seen quite a lot of deals as appetite, and I think that might be also a lot of opportunism. You know, people thinking that there's quite a lot of businesses that maybe were profitable before the pandemic. Now they're struggling. There's an opportunity to get a cheap deal. You know, I could see that. But I think there will always be money for the right business. And I think even after this, I think there still will be an appetite. I still see quite a lot of money flowing still on the investment side.
Which is good, which is like, building on your previous comment, that's going to be the route that's going to have to be taken for a lot of businesses, where debt is either unattainable, or further debt is unattainable for them, or just too expensive.
Yeah.
So key to that is putting the right business plan together, the right projections together, and that's something that obviously you and your team can help with. So if anybody wants to find out more about RJF Accounting, about how you help startup and businesses and established businesses looking to get funding or looking to exit, how you prepare from that, how can they find out more?
On the website, everything's on the website. It's at www.rjf.uk.com. So you can contact and arrange an appointment with me. I'll have a call, no charge, happy to to have a conversation with someone who wants some help or advice. But there's lots of sort of resources on there as well. We blog regularly relevant to sort of the startup and early stage business. So there's lots of advice and tips and things on there which you can find, and on social media as well. We're on the usual channels, so we post regularly blogs and articles on there, which a lot of people, you know, particular clients, say they find it really useful and helpful. You know, not just finance, but, you know, we did one recently on making my first hire, what do I need to consider, you know, things like that, which often people, what I'm doing is relaying a lot of questions which I get asked.
Yeah.
There's a question that I got asked, you know, I'm looking to take someone on, what's the cost of it? So they can contact through there as well.
Fantastic. Rob, thank you so much for your time today on the Business Mastermind podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business Mastermind podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate and review so that more people like you can get their business back on their own terms, enjoy more success and create more impact.